This episode is sponsored by Sometime After. What did happen after the happily ever after for some of the world's favorite fairy tale characters? Filled with geek jokes, lighthearted humor, and an evolving storyline, Sometime After is a different twist on the characters you grew up with. New comics post every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at sometimeaftercomic.com.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, June 3rd, 2012, and this is episode 71 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. With, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
Over from alexisguide.net, Alex Eberling.
Good morning.
And I'm Thomas Rivore from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Let's take a look at the news. Our top story is this past weekend was the National Cartoon Society Award winners. That's right, the Rubens have gone on. And rather than giving everyone a nice corned beef sandwich with sauerkraut, they get this silly gold statue. But what does this have to do with webcomics? Well, Scenes from a Multiverse has won the Ruben for online comics. That's right. The National Cartoon Society has a category for us here on online comics. Their name for us webcomickers. And out of the three nominees, that's right, Scenes from a Multiverse is our winner. So let's go ahead and congratulate them. And then let's go ahead and go on to the rest of our news. Over with the buzz with Alex.
Buzz, buzz, buzz. All right, two stories are in buzz this week. The first comes to us from from ShiftyLook.com via Comics Beat, and it's Goodbye to the Impulse Buy. Dean Haspiel writes about how the current sort of culture of comic book shops kind of hurts the impulse buy and with the consumer and you know, with having to have pull lists and you know, pre-orders and subscriptions for everything, it makes it really hard to just sort of browse the racks and find something that was just, you know, came out last week sometimes. It's a little better in the large metropolitan areas like New York and Chicago and LA to a certain point. But if you're in a small town, if you're not pre-ordering a lot of stuff, then you're kind of out of luck and you kind of have to put stuff on your pull list that maybe you're not even going to like. It's a good rundown about that. There's other links to it from Comics Beat as well. They've had other articles come in about that subject. So it's good reading. And they make the point that with webcomics, a lot of that is not really an issue. Haha. Anyways, next up is the Wall Street Journal on comics. Worst comic book ever. Found via Robot 6 on comicbookresearch.com. Superheroes dominate the box office, the medium that birthed them has moved on, and it kind of talks about how comic books are so mired in mythology and back continuity and stuff that they're pretty inaccessible to a lot of the movie-going public that are now getting into the Avengers.
Alex,
that is it for Buzz?
If I could jump in here, one of the reasons we had this article was that there was quite a backlash against the Wall Street Journal about this. They came down pretty hard on comics, and a lot of comics readers were pretty offended about the whole thing. So there's been a back and forth.
Good to know. That's pretty much it for Buzz this week. Let's move on to business with Eric.
All right. Thank you, Alex. We have a bunch of business articles this week. This first business article comes to us from Robot 6 and Comic Book Resources, talking about the New York Comic Con absorbing the New York Anime Con into its folds. New York Comic Con and New York Anime Con used to be separate entities. It's now going to combine both into one single con. It also is some suspect that this may change the venue that they are going to use. For the last couple of years, it has been at the Jarvis Center, but this may change with the change in the nature of the con. We also have coming to us from Comics Beat a story about the Eagle Awards. The claws are out for the Eagle Awards, and this is a back and forth over the choices made in the Eagle Awards. It's an interesting look into how the actual awards work. Coming to us from our next article, coming to us from Robot Six, it talks about Tim Gibson, who has been very successful in movies, now moving into making webcomics. So we now see a situation where we have someone who is going from the movie medium into the webcomic medium with a webcomic called Moth City. That's an article about his new webcomic is coming to us from, again, Robot Six. Moving down, we have an article coming to us from Comics Beat talking about the prospect of a digital a distribution war looming with digital exclusives. What has been happening recently is we've had a number of app-based distributors rise up. Instead of comic companies exclusively distributing their comics through their own apps, they are going through other apps such as Comixology in imitating the Diamond model. Diamond has also signed on with a distributor through this method. It's now looking as if there may be a back and forth war to rival what happened with Diamond Comics, where if you buy through one distributor, you're not going to get if you buy through one distributor will be exclusively carrying certain comics. It's questionable if this marketing strategy will actually help the companies or hurt them. Our final article comes to us through our own resources. This is based off of a number of resources we did, and this is regarding PayPal's obscenity policy. Back in March, PayPal released a post saying that PayPal supports a free internet and does not ban publishers for publishing erotica. They stated that they deal with things on a case by case basis, and they do not ban accounts, but they only ban products. This was coming to us from the director of communications from PayPal on an officially sponsored PayPal blog. However, a call to PayPal's brand risk assessment management department yielded that all of these statements are not true, and the brand risk assessment department is still running as if anything that would be considered obscene is a violation of PayPal's agreement. And if you violate that agreement, they do not deal with it on a product by product basis, but ban your entire account. So there seems to be a contradiction here in what is being stated publicly and what is the actual operating procedures. Behind this seems that there was an exception made for ebooks because there was an outcry against banning ebooks, but PayPal's general policy has remained the same, and the exception is only being made in this case. We sent a request into both Nair, who is the head of communication, the president of communications, and to PayPal's brand risk assessment management department for clarification on this topic, but they did not get back to us by the time of this podcast to actually tell us what was going on. And that finishes our business news. Back to you, Tom.
And let's go ahead and head over to our education division with Alex.
Hey, first up in education, via comicspeak.com over on Warren Ellis's blog, it's titled, "Sometimes I Think About Reinstating the Comment System." And apparently this guy, Charlie Strauss, sort of put up a thing about his own comment sections. "Much as any artifact exposed to the maw of a small child eventually becomes soggy and turns brown, I am coming to the conclusion that any comment thread on this blog will, between 102 comments in, circle around to become a discussion of the, you know, five, you know, sort of random topics." And it's kind of about Warren Ellis's dilemma over whether or not to put the comments back on his blog, and sort of the feeling that I think lots and lots of online creators of any thread can relate to. And sometimes you just don't really like your commenters, and it's okay to feel that way. You just do not express that. So sometimes if you need to, just maybe it's better not to have the comments on at all. I mean, there's lots of ways for other people to contact you. If you've got Twitter, if you've got Facebook, if you've got Tumblr, all sorts of things. So that is something to think about. The next one up is from the New York Times via, oh wait, actually, another from WarrenEllis.com. Shape of the New Webcomics. I don't think I read this one. Was this here the whole time?
Yes, it was. I'll jump in.
Okay, that'd be great.
The Shape of the New Webcomics. This is coming from Warren Ellis, where he starts talking about layout experiments with webcomics. Specifically, he's talking about the contrast of the standard 8.5 and 11 page to the more experimental full screen page that usually has the aspect ratio of about 10 to 6. So it fills the screen. He goes through some things like Thrillbent that uses coding to have panels appear above them, and some of the more dynamic settings. And then he talks about how that can be incorporated into an actual print book. So he talks all about this experiment that it's going through and why he chose with his to put one way, but why it's you can go the other way as well. And that's what that article's about.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know how I skipped that one. Anyway, the last story in education this week is How to Pitch Your Comic by or to Larry Young over on bleedingcool.com. Larry Young is a publisher at Eight Planet Lar and First Comics. It talks about what not to do when trying to pitch a comic to him or any other publisher. It's a list of things like captions and dialogue balloons should not have more than 25 words in them. Don't switch scenes in the middle of a page. The query letter with no query, which is a big one. They think just saying, hey, review my comic book script at this URL without actually saying something to actually get him engaged. Like, this is right up your alley and has a great marketing hook and whatnot. Sometimes getting complete works and seeing just sort of newbie mistakes like punctuation and stuff like that. It's a pretty good rundown of what you should do and what not to do about pitching a comic, and it's a good thing to think about when you're doing any sort of creative work. And that's it for education this week.
Grammar? We don't need no stinking grammar. We're webcomics.
We talk good.
Yeah. We've done gone to edumacation land.
I went to art school, not talking school.
Nah. Talk.
But that brings it back to me. Over with our tech division. We've got some good news and some bad news all in the same story. It seems that there was a post over on Reddit that had a point-by-point instructions how one can take their Comixology downloads, which you've paid for, and save them to your computer so you can read them on your desktop. Great story. But Comixology has come back and have not only gone through and asked the person to take this post down, they have been tracking people who have been doing this. The author of the original script has said, yes, that was me. I was contacted by Comixology and was asked to remove the post. I figured doing what they wanted was a better deal than getting everyone banned from their accounts. Apparently, the program produced a unique and identifiable request on their end. In hindsight, posting it to Reddit probably wasn't the best idea. It really sucks. I spent a good 2 weeks working on that thing, and now I can't even back up my own stuff. Nothing more to add to that one. Okay. Next, over from our friends at GigaOhm.com, Keith Raboy has a little chat about why Square's handcrafted approaches to payments cannot win. They're talking about the artisans who create, who handcraft and make the physical items, and how the payments are going over there. Even with growing funding competition from some well-funded companies, Square hasn't slowed down, now processing over $5 billion on an annualized rate. But it talks about what they're doing and how they can keep rivals from eating into their profits. And finally, let's go ahead and take a look over at paidcontent.org. It seems that Google is going to be purchasing a lot of bottom-level domain names, such as .lol or .youtube or .google, and a lot of other ones to try and just step up that domain's landscape before it gets done. And finally, one more over from pennyarcade.com. That's right. As I sit here and start going om.
Okay, I'll jump in again.
We'll jump in. Over to you, Eric. He said, you're the one who brought in the story.
Penny Arcade TV. This is a site that has news programs. They talked about, in the gaming context, the problem of spectrum crunch, in that essentially as smartphone and iPad and smart pad use has expanded, the amount of available spectrum has decreased to the point where you cannot get unlimited plans on carriers anymore. And we've seen this, and they say the problem's going to get worse. In the next 2 years, we are going to run out of usable spectrum unless some major changes come about. And that is something that is facing all internet as we go increasingly mobile. And that was the gist of that story.
And that brings us to the end of our tech division. Thank you for jumping in there, Eric. And let's go ahead and take a look at some of our tidbits. Alex, take away the tidbits.
Tidbits, brought to you by Chex Mix. Nom, 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 nom. First up in tidbits, over on thehuffingtonpost.com, 1 million moms, parenthetically, actually, 40,000 moms, once again is rearing its ugly head to condemn DC Comics and Marvel superheroes for gay characters. An upcoming issue of Astonishing X-Men, the first openly gay hero in Marvel's continuity, Northstar, is going to be tying his knot with his the knot with his long-term boyfriend. And in a recent announcement, the current Green Lantern is going to come out of the closet. And so 1 million moms taking a break from boycotting JCPenney is sending lots of angry letters to Marvel and DC talking about how we're corrupting the children and whatnot. Over on goodcomics.com, or goodcomics.comicbookresources.com, Templar, Arizona, volumes 1 through 4 get a very good review, as they should, because it's awesome. So congrats to Spike. And finally, over on Geek News, Clefield on webcomics, our good friend Sean Clefield, he attended a comics philosophy and practice panel at the University of Chicago last weekend with creators such as, let's see, Robert Crumb, Art Spiegelman, Linda Barry, Alison Bechdel, Joe Sacco, talking about the legacy of comics and stuff. But apparently webcomics were not a part of the discussion. It's not really that big of a surprise since most of these creators got big before computers were really widespread, and some of them were honing their craft before computers even existed. But it does illustrate a bit of a hole there that's was not addressed. And that is it for the tidbits this week.
That brings it back to me, and he did say, lo, through the valley of death did the Batman ride, taking out his batarang and smiting all within his way. That's right. Over in Birmingham in the UK, there is someone who is dressed up as the Dark Knight himself, advocating Batmanism. That's right, a Batman religion.
Do they all have to wear capes?
Oh, no, but they have to be
careful.
Watch
the video. It's Seven Kinds of Austin.
This is over at comicsbeat.com, and there's really not, again, we can't say much about it. This is one of those things that you have to experience for yourself.
Oh, my God. He's the little white priest collar with his Batman cowl. That's
so
amazing.
Awesome.
But on the other, speaking of Batman, on the other end of the spectrum from God, over on io9.com, we have the first Frank Miller comic strip. That's right. Welcome from the Future, which Frank Miller wrote back for his high school newspaper. Gee, is it any wonder Frank Miller turned out the way that he did?
And finally, over at our friends at comicsbeat.com, they have what they are calling the coolest thing of the day. Superheroes in historic photos. That's right. Whether it be the surrender of the Germans being herded by V for Vendetta, or a subtle prodding of the Allied forces of Churchill, Stalin, and FDR by the Dark Lord of the Sith himself, there are many photos over there showing what really went on behind the scenes. Puts human resources and history all in a brand new light. That's over at comicsbeat.com. And then from something funny over to something that's not so funny, it's things that make us cry, a new division. And let's have something else that makes us cry. Eric, take it away.
Gee, thanks, Tom. yes, we have added a new section for stories that just make us depressed. Our first thing is Scott Kurtz is a jerk on the internet and everyone reacts negatively. We also have news in from scientists that the sun rose in the east, water is wet, and breathing oxygen will actually prolong your life. And this is concluding our shocking news for people who live under rocks. No, specifically, Scott Kurtz came out with a trolling post saying that the Kirby estate shouldn't get anything for creating Avengers, and there was a understandable outrage about this. And in a strange final bit, there was a backlash from Brad Geiger saying that people should stop picking on Scott Kurtz, completing the circle of crazy. Going on to
leave Brittany alone.
and yes, and going on to things that are crazy, we have the situation from Jersey Shore is getting his own family friendly comic.
Family friendly.
Which,
by family, are you talking about, you know, those over in the mafia? You know, the family. Yeah.
Very friendly to them. Okay.
I saw this cover on Tumblr, and like the perspective on this woman's legs is so unfortunate. It looks like it's 9 feet tall.
Okay, who's drawing this?
Yes,
Rob Liefeld.
I think the fact that someone has managed to draw a situation comic and the universe did not explode is props enough to them. So, yes, there is that going on, and the last. And the last thing that makes us sad is a news post that topless body-painted cosplayers were asked to leave a Comic-Con convention, which I can understand, but I'm just saying sets a really bad precedent when you're asking topless attractive women to leave comic conventions. And
topless women wearing pasties.
And yes, they're wearing pasties. Bad. They were not breaking like any laws.
It's not like even they were even waving their nipples all over the place.
Nope. Nope, they were not breaking any laws, but someone was offended and they had to be asked to leave.
In other words, they got their tits in a ringer.
Yes, that is correct.
That's it for this week, everybody. Good night.
And that concludes the things that make us sad this week. Back to you, Tom.
Things that make us sad, we're doing nothing but laughing at them. But we'll be back with
I'll cry.
We'll be back with our discussion portion of the program right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 71 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's Sunday, June 3rd, and let's go ahead and bring our commentators and discussers here. From BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
From AlexsGuy.net, Alex Eberling.
Leave Scott Kurtz alone!
I didn't know we had Brad here today.
And our special guest today, the creator, writer, and artist of Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki and the adulterated comic over at Filthy Figments called Useless King, Kitty Hawk.
Thank you for having me. Go to sgby.com for sexy fun.
And that leaves me, your main host and discussion leader, Thomas Rivore, over at from 910comics.com. That's 910cmx.com. See, I'm supposed to get the plugged in. So let's go ahead and start off. We're going to Eric, you take us off with, because you're the one who did a lot of the research into, as you call it, the PayPal thing.
Okay, PayPal. So just to go back, a little while back, we did a lot of research on PayPal and the credit card companies in general. Specifically, it seems like there is a cascading down effect of trying to stomp out any form of obscenity through the systems. It appears that this is coming from Visa, and there are actually statements from PayPal that says that a lot of this obscenity rules are coming from Visa, the credit card company, although we haven't had any confirmation on that. But what happened recently was PayPal, following their obscenity policies, banned a bunch of e-publishers, specifically e-publishers that had erotica that had a feature that featured in it things like incest, bestiality, and underage sex. And this got people rather upset because if you think about it, some of the classic works of literature have those themes in there. For just for example, most Greek myths have those themes in there. And people got really upset with PayPal, and there was a letter writing campaign. Their ACLU got involved. There was a lot of forces aligning against PayPal. And then all of a sudden, PayPal comes out and says, no, no, this is not our policy, and this has never been our policy. We were only looking at these types of media because these are the ones that have images in them. Well, that didn't make people happy since that wasn't true. And then they clarified saying, well, okay, here's what's happening. We're dealing on things with a case-by-case basis. We don't ban individuals. We only work on it by a product-by-product basis. We don't ban erotica. We're pro-erotica. We are focusing only on things that feature what are considered illegal acts, so bestiality, incest, that sort of thing. And we're only going to focus on books that have images, and we're going to only do it on a case-by-case basis with the publishers. We won't ban publishers' accounts. Now, for webcomics, that's sort of interesting on two parts. First of all, they're saying, well, if you have images, you're dead to us. They are still are very against erotic images in any form. But if it's books, they're saying, well, we're going to do a case-by-case account. I called up PayPal, asked them, the department in charge of this. I talked to one of their representatives who actually does the banning there. They say that's absolutely not true. They said that, first of all, the blog that is called the PayPal blog that has on the top of it your official place for all things PayPal is not official. Even though it's owned by PayPal and it says it's the official place. They also said there's been no change in policy and that PayPal's policy is anything that is considered obscene will be banned and will cause a ban of the account, all accounts associated with the individual. It's not even by an account basis. It's an individual. An individual gets banned from using PayPal. And they say their definition of obscene is not the Supreme Court's definition. It is anything that could be considered to offend. And the actual measure is if anyone files a complaint about it, they will ban the accounts.
So since PayPal's actions here offend me, they have to ban themselves.
Well, they review it first, but there is no test.
PayPal has gone through and they've had for the longest time a shoot first and ask questions never.
Well, policy. Yeah. They're the bank. They can do what they want.
Oh, yes. And actually, I mean, that's you mentioned bank, but what it is it's beyond Visa. A lot of the underwriting banks for some of the credit cards happen to be owned by people whose religions don't allow for this type of stuff. So yeah. I mean, they're the ones who are setting up the rules. Now, if this was PayPal itself, I would say it's their business. They could do what they want. Somebody could set up a competitor to PayPal, and we'd all flock over there. There has been no legitimate alternative to PayPal yet. There have been some attempts, but
Paystone was one.
Yeah. And Western Union had one. And I mean, there are a number of companies that have tried it, but PayPal is the 500-pound gorilla, which means that they get to do what 500-pound gorillas do.
Yeah, they get to decide who lives and who dies.
Yeah. Now, my problem is
with the saying two things. PayPal can do whatever they want, but these statements are going to cause people to break their policies because they are going to read these blogs. And this started, I did this research because we had someone on the Webcomic Beacon saying he has based his site off of the statements on this blog. Now, if someone reports him, he's going to get screwed, and this is because he listened to what PayPal told them to do. And that is a problem.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty bad that, like, they've basically said it so that, like, they're speaking out both sides of their mouth. They want to seem cool, but at the same time, they've decided that they can do whatever they want. And the thing is that the only reason that this is getting any kind of flack is that I imagine that some of these writers do have lawyers. And in a lot of cases, when you get jacked by PayPal, you don't have a lawyer, so you're like, oh well.
Yeah, well,
and it goes back down to, I mean, they say whatever's obscene. Now, I mean, this has gone here in the States. This has gone through and has a certain definition on it. But PayPal is an international organization. What's obscene here may be permissible over in Japan or Australia. Well,
they have different rules for each country. In fact, like. Actually, Visa will not allow you to do transactions if you have vampires in your comet.
Yeah, or that sucks.
Or anything that might resemble an animal feature.
Non-human characters, yes. Naked mermaids is against Visa's rule.
Well, they do allow mermaids. That's the weird thing. They'll allow mermaids, but then like they won't allow like vampires.
Yeah.
So it's inconsistent, but the thing is that it really just comes down to, do you have a lawyer? Can you fight this? If you can't, oh well, sorry, try again. And I hate that that's the system, but that really is. And like, it's good that these people are fighting back against PayPal, but at the same time, it's like, it took this long. It just took the wrong, you know, them messing with the wrong person. And that's still
all it took was for somebody who had the time and or the money to stand up to it.
Yeah, it's usually the money, because it's usually that a lot of people get screwed over until someone who actually does have some money and says, no, I'm really going to fight this, says that and does it. But in the meantime, there's like been so many people who've been kicked off.
But the problem is, they fought it, and then PayPal said, yes, we're going to change, and then didn't change.
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah, because like in a week's time, the average person will believe that PayPal has totally gone back and has changed their policy. And if you talk to them about it, you say, no, they haven't. They'll say, no, I remember reading about how PayPal said they were going to change. Exactly. And that's all they need to do.
But it comes down to, PayPal never changed their terms of agreement.
Oh, no, they didn't. No, they never did.
They could say, I mean, the sky is red, and that doesn't mean that it's going to be red. I know. Unless it comes down to the official stuff. I personally think that a lot of the stuff that, I mean, I've known a number of webcomic creators who have been royally screwed by PayPal, that where they were taking donations because they had one thing or two thing or, you know, 57 things that PayPal may have found obscene. They lost money on it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hurtful to us in the small businesses.
Oh, no, I agree. I'm just saying that you have to think of it like they don't really care. All they care about is they got their press release out there saying that they're not going to do this ever again, even if they didn't change their terms of service, because the reason is that the average person is going to believe the press release because it was on the news. That's all they need to do. And that's part of the problem that's happening like in America, is that the press releases are believed, but that's not reality. And all they need to do is just convince you for a week that that's true. And then everyone believes it's true. And I think it's crap. And I hope that the people keep up on this, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. But then that explains the upcoming elections that we have here too, which you're not going to be a part of because you're leaving.
I can still do an absentee ballot. So, you know, it won't be counted, but I can still do it.
But let's go ahead and go on to our next story, and that is about the New York Comic Con absorbing the New York Anime Festival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That Repop has officially announced that it will fold the New York Anime Festival into New York Comic Con rather than continue them as separate events held at the same location. This move has nothing to do with our loyalty or commitment to the anime community and everything to do with the growth and identity of New York Comic Con as a leading pop culture event. Repop's Lance Fensterman said in a statement, New York City's Comic-Con embraces all elements of the pop culture world, including anime, and we have evolved to a point where the existence of NYAF outside our universe is almost a contradiction. We will better be able to serve the anime community from within the New York Comic-Con infrastructure rather than have a show which is separate and which will always be dwarfed by everything that New York Comic-Con represents and is. Now, I can see a lot of good coming from this, and from both a business standpoint and from the community standpoint, because it gets people interested in who may just be going for the comic books or for some of the media stuff and gets to see the dark side, which is anime.
Well, or like in the case of from the anime side, since I do a lot of the anime conventions, what is this old arcane thing that is like has lots of mythology that I can probably pull from? You know, like it's sort of like, I think it's a good move that they're doing this. It will actually tie together both of them and it'll make a stronger convention.
Now, weren't they always on the same weekend anyway, or have been in recent years?
It's sort of like how Dragon Con and the Comics Expo in Atlanta were on the same weekend, but they were still separate. Right. And eventually they merged into the same thing. So I think it's like that kind of situation.
Super Dragon Zord Con.
Exactly. unfortunately, the comics division got smaller. But this is probably a good move. I didn't realize that the Anime Fest was only started in 2007. So I was like, when I read the article and it said at the height of the anime boom, I was like, oh, so you mean like in 2000 or 2001? And like, it was like 2007. I was like, whoa, that is late.
No.
That is late in the game, especially for something as big as it is. Like, and also, if I recall, it was kind of pricey to go to as well. Like, I wanted to go so bad to see Miku. I think it was last year she came. And it was like, no, I cannot afford that. No, no, no. And that was part of the problem, I think, with the Anime Fest part, at least. Because, like, anime fans tend to be younger, have less money because they are younger. So getting there was a little harder.
But so let's also take a look at some of the downside for something like this. I mean, at an anime con, I mean, it's going to be at all anime all the time, where you have the specializations and you'll be able to see things without being inundated by all the other stuff.
Well, no. Because, like, actually, if you go to an anime convention, it is so integrated. Like you see comic you see American comic characters walking next to a video game character, next to an anime character, next to a web comic character. Like anime conventions are a lot more diverse than comic conventions. Like I've been I've been to a couple comic conventions, and the age is much older because it's from the I'd say like the 90s were the heyday. So a lot of the fans are a little older. They have more money, but they are more interested in comics than they are in like anime. Whereas on the anime side, I would say they're more open to comics because it's another form of media. Come on, show it to me. I love it. You know?
Yeah. So, it's like the crowd at anime conventions is younger, I think. And that skews their interests more to pretty much anything that's online now, because I don't think there's a teenager that exists right now that does not read webcomics.
And if they are, they're a sad, sad person. We'll rescue you soon. Don't worry.
Help and if they're not, then I say, hey, you should read my comic.
Yeah, read SGBY. Yeah.
Go ahead and send us those little green pieces of paper in your parents' purses and wallets.
Oh, God.
I prefer the bits.
Love taking money from teenagers. It's my favorite thing ever.
I like taking money from anybody. I'm an equal opportunity money whore.
For some reason, though, the teenager money is just so satisfying.
Oh, you like them young.
And that brings us back to the PayPal thing. But let's go ahead and go on to their next topic, which is the Spectrum Crunch.
Oh, boy.
It sounds like you've got a little something to say about that, Kitty Hawk.
I have a beef with a lot of the ISPs and stuff, because I know about like what happened in the 90s as far as like Bill Clinton giving, giving AT&T $200 million to create a broadband network across the United States. What did they do instead? They bought cell phone companies and all the rest of the bells, except for Verizon and like one little obscure bell that will never be absorbed. And that's why I just laugh at like the concept of there's going to be a spectrum crunch. Are you serious? We gave you tons of money back in the 90s. You didn't spend it on what you should have. Instead, you, like I said, you spend it on buying yourself back up and buying Coke and whores. And now you're like, oh, boo-hoo-hoo, there's going to be a spectrum crunch. That's why I need to put a limit on how many gigabytes you can use per month.
Well, plus the fact that they've gone through, and part of the whole reasoning behind forcing people to go to HDTV as opposed to the analog VHF and UHF channels was to open up the spectrum. Those are not being used.
But that's progress.
Here's the problem. Their poor planning is our problem. Because you are right in that they didn't buy the spectrum when they had the opportunity.
They didn't build the infrastructure they should have.
And what's happening now is the spectrum is owned by TV companies who have gone digital, but they still own tons of spectrum that they're not using. That would be great spectrum to use. Yeah. Except they're going to ask a ton of money for it because now it's really valuable and it's just getting more and more valuable. And the phone companies like AT&T are saying, oh, we don't have any money to buy it now. Well, yeah,
except that they're actually colluding with them because a lot of the media companies are also ISPs now, like Time Warner, NBC, Universal, Comcast. I think Disney owns some as well. So it's really just like they're just as bad. They're also whining about how there's a spectrum crunch when they own the spectrum. So it's just basically whining all around just to get money. That's what I think.
No. They are creating a crisis so the government will bail them out.
And also so they can just fuck you. Excuse my language. But basically they want to basically get you down to 2 gigabytes per month. And then, oh, look at that. Now we're using LTE, and it's going to eat your gigabytes up like crazy. Thanks.
Yeah.
Buy some more gigabytes. That's why that's why I'm very sad about giving up my AT&T Unlimited.
Hear, hear.
I mean, I held on to that thing as long as I could.
Oh, I'm holding on to that thing, even though the AT&T quality stinks on ice. I'm keeping my Unlimited plan.
I cried the day I left T-Mobile. I loved T-Mobile. It was wonderful. The service was wonderful. It's just that, sorry, iPhone, gotta go.
Yep.
But now I have to go to Australia, and they have caps as well, which I'm like, oh, well. It's like being in America again.
But that's what a lot of it is. It's planned obsolescence, bring that old term back, to try and force people in. Even those of us who are being grandfathered in, they've already set it up to where when they go to the 4G or beyond, those of us who have grandfathered data plans are not going to be brought over to those.
Oh, no. But I actually have I actually have some hope, because I do remember the days of metered internet, and they tried to bring that back again, but they're just sort of being hesitant about that, because I remember back when you had to pay for AOL by the hour, and there were people who did that, and I thought they were idiots, because I had a normal ISP that I just dialed into Blammo. I'm on the internet instead of going through AOL.
Maybe
there'll be some backlash, and that would be good, because people love their unlimited porn.
See, I was lucky in that respect. When my family finally got internet, it was like October of 1999, and we got a cable modem immediately.
I think we got internet
out of the horrors of like AOL and dialing and.
It was hilarious in high school, because like everyone else had AOL, and because this was the heyday of AOL, everyone was like, oh my God, I spent all night trying to get on the internet, but there's just too many people on. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just dial in and everything's hunky dory. Cause I think I had something like IBM or something like that.
Well, back in my day, we had to manually carry our buckets of bits all the way up, uphill in the snow.
Dude, I know you were probably on BBSs, so don't even start.
I was running BBSs.
Oh, I love you. Oh my God, I love you because I love I just love BBSs. They're
but awesome. Let's go ahead and go on to our next story, and that is something related to that, and that is about the Comixology hack, I think that's the best way to do it, and how it was quickly reversed. Now, I mean, of course, I'm someone who believes, and apparently so does the Supreme Court, that if you buy something, that is yours.
Yeah.
So if you buy this software and you are purchasing the content on there, that is your content. You should be able to take it and read it on your laptop, read it on your cell phone, whatever.
Hey, don't copy that floppy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just – it's just crap that like – okay, so I can do whatever I want. I agree with that. But also I'm just laughing because – so now you put more DRM on there, which I'm sure is going to mess up the files and it's going to get broken. It's going to get hacked again. The pro tip is DRM is just stupid. It's just a race you'll never win.
Well, thing is, they didn't put the more DRM. They just vaguely threaten the people who are breaking.
Oh, I thought they put DRM on it.
No, they called up the guy who created the hack and said, "We know who you are, and we know everyone who download who
we know
did this.
Where you live."
Okay, and he said, all right, fine, I'll take it down.
That would have been like, come at me, bro, but like, maybe I'm more of a badass.
Yeah, he did not want to fight this fight, but I think it would have been a great fight.
Oh, I think he should have done it. I think he should have totally said, okay, so instead of because I thought they were DRMing it.
Nope.
And if that's the case, then I would have been like, okay, so you're going to threaten me instead of doing your damn job of keeping me from doing this, which if you don't want me to do this, you need to do something. Now, I said that DRM is like a game you'll never win. But at the same time, threatening someone is just like, OK,
yeah.
What Sony are you going to do?
Sony had the right idea back with some of the people who were cracking the PS3s. What did they do? They hired the people.
And that's the way you should do it. Like, let's see, like it. It's just it's more common sense because that person can now get into your system and you should help. You should say, hey, how about I pay you $150,000 a year so you don't do that anymore and you do that for me?
Yeah, but most of the white hats out there are former black hats. Yeah,
yeah.
People who write antivirus software, they're people who wrote virus software.
Exactly.
But here's the problem. You can't put DRM on an image because it has to display the image.
You can, but like I said, it usually goes wrong because
it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, it does.
And the problem is the real problem with this that you are renting the comics is that this is a train wreck that is about to happen in about 2 years.
It's already happening. I mean,
yeah.
You can see it.
Comixology is going to go under new management, lose a contract with one of their companies, and all of the comics that thousands of dollars you spent to have those comics on your computer and on your phone are going to vanish overnight.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm just sort of like this. I think what's going to end up actually happening is I think Comixology is going to get bought. Like, who's mainly going with Comixology? It's Marvel, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Marvel and Dark Horse.
So what I think is going to happen, since there seems to be already this split between the programs, you know, as far as like the viewers, I think honestly they're going to get bought by the respective company that uses them the most, and then they'll just kick everybody else off. And you'll just like, so if you went with either of these, like Diamond Direct or Comixology, I hope to God that you've got a backup plan because in a couple of years, they're just going to get bought because they're just going to be like, well, I can just own this and then I can keep everybody else out. Yay!
Back in the early days of take home media, there was actually a system where you would bring a disc home, plug it into your set top system. It would dial in for approval And then you could watch the movie. Now, of course, that lasted, I think, maybe about 6 months to a year. And after that, all these things that you've bought were absolutely worthless because it would dial in. There's nothing to answer the phone.
Well, that's why I always thought
this is going to be.
Yeah, that's why I always thought like subscription services have always been like the only ones that really make sense are like Pandora or things like that, because like then you're just streaming anyway. But like people who are like, oh, I picked the music I want and then I don't own it, but it's there for me to listen to it. I'm like, why are you paying $15 a month? Because that's more than you're probably going to spend.
Exactly. And as we've seen from the Avengers movie and then later over in the summer, The Dark Knight Rises, these are movies based on comic books that are, or The Walking Dead, that are making in bundles and bushels and cartloads of money. I mean, Avengers has broken, what, $1 billion? That's more than enough to run the company off of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. Comic books need to become a loss leader. Get people interested in the books, we do with webcomics.
Well, they should be like webcomics,
But Tom, that's a good argument if you're Marvel right now. What if you're DC and the last movie you came out with was Green Lantern?
Green Lantern still made money.
Well, because they have Cartoon Network. Because Time Warner, Cartoon Network, DC, they are making money off of their other properties. Their movies just aren't as good. Like, and their animation has been much better than Marvel's so far.
That's an understatement.
Well, yeah.
With the exception of Avengers World's Greatest Heroes, I mean, it's Marvel animation has been terrible.
Yeah, it has been pretty terrible. So I'd say, like, yeah, they're not doing slam dunks in the box office. That's their fault. But they are doing well in other forms. Now, I do agree that the comic books should probably just be free. Honestly, just make them advertisement. Like, that's what a web comic is. It's basically, hi, try this out. You want some more? Buy some merch or do a commission, you know? So that's probably what they should do. Now, I don't know if they'll actually do that because there is a huge staff that would have to be let go if they were to just go completely digital, have it online. And I don't know if that's actually going to happen.
Well, yeah, it's cultural problem at both Marvel and DC that they can't see this. And they keep on coming out with web initiatives, and their web initiatives are strictly designed around the idea of people must be paying us for this content, you know, and so we can't let people just download it and print it out themselves.
Well,
wrap it in Flash. They put it behind a subscription wall. They do all of these things because they can't get their head around the fact that they are not content producers. Well, they're the advertising department.
They're basically what we're running into is that we have a class of people who basically became the editor and publisher class. And if you look at them, they basically all come from the same schools. They all know each other. So it's basically like, I was born into this position. I deserve this job. I deserve this money. And that's why there's such a backlash. It's basically, you're telling these people, I'm sorry, but in the new world, you're no longer necessary. It's like having to tell people who are in offices who are data entry, I'm sorry, now we have an AI that can do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad, but you know, we don't have people on looms doing it by themselves.
This is actually the exact opposite of the argument that I make, because it's the people who don't know the industry. Yeah, I mean, such as over at DC, my favorite whipping boy, Dan DiDio.
These are second generation people. So I do agree that they don't know the industry, but they've basically, this is the lessons that the previous generation left for these people. They didn't do a very good job of like telling them, okay, here's your job. But at the same time, I'm also going to say, I don't understand why there's so many people in like the publishing divisions. Cause it's like a lot of the jobs, it's like, why are they still there? Like, you don't see as many letterers anymore, but I'm like, letterers? Like, seriously? Like, you just need some fonts.
Well, lettering is, like, I've always said, I'm a strong supporter of the letters because I can see things done by a good letterer that you cannot get off
the store. Oh, no, I think it's an art form.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like saying, like, okay, I actually was almost recruited to be a book arts person. And basically what that means is binding books by hand. Now, I agree that this is an art form and it is beautiful and I actually enjoyed it. But at the same time, it's like, what is this used for anymore? I mean, seriously, we have machines that can do this. And aside from like hanging it, you know, putting it in a museum, I don't really see what this is necessary for. And it's sad. It really is sad saying, I'm sorry, but you're unnecessary. It's the same way as like maybe in the future, I'm going to be unnecessary because there's going to be an AI that draws something. I'm like, well, that's it. I'm over. Done. It can draw sexier pictures than me.
You put a random generator in there and it already draws better than I do. So
but what I'm trying to point out is that unfortunately, we're running into this. A lot of people recently have found out that their jobs are no longer like necessary. And like, I don't want to say you're worthless, but at the same time, we have to maybe think about maybe we shouldn't think about jobs as worth and think of jobs more as I do this because I enjoy this, not because I expect to get something back from it.
That sounds like a good point. And we're running out of time. So the next thing I want to do is I want to bring up, we talked about the Batmanism preacher.
Woo-hoo!
So I wanted to go through, let me set everything up here, and I'm going to play the audio for this. Hold on, folks.
Preach on, Batman!
The audio is cool, but the visuals of the Batman preacher are just perfect.
I know that Batman is there. And when I leave, there's going to be loads more. Let's do it. Preach. Go.
In those days.
Okay, the Keaton, the Kilmer, and the Holy Baal. They are the true prophets. Do not believe in Clooney, or he is a false prophet.
These are the people that are feeding Batman. These are the people that protect us. You're a Batmanist. You're a Batmanist. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. Why don't you read the book? Because you're afraid. You're afraid of the lesson in Batman Year One. You're afraid of what it can teach you. You're afraid that you're going to give in to the Joker. You'll give in to Catwoman. You'll give in to the Riddler. You have the Joker inside you, don't you, sir? Remember when Commissioner Gordon came to Gotham City and you were all in the Batman and you all were sent. And those people of Gotham were baptized. So let's baptize you people. I've got your bananas. Let's get some Batman. This is for you people. Because yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of Arkham, I will fear no two-face. Our book teaches.
Dr. Quinzel, we're paging you. You're needed. My God.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. As somebody who used to have a street preacher yell at them every time I went to the student center, bravo.
I just like that Clooney is a false prophet. That is awesome.
That right there is the best part. That right there, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, but he included Kilmer in the good side. Come on.
Kilmer was better than Clooney. I'm sorry. I love George Clooney, but Jesus Christ.
See, now, if he had said that Joel Schumacher was the false prophet, more power to him.
Okay, no. Okay.
Joel Schumacher is not a false prophet. He's the greatest monster to ever live.
The beast which comes from the deep and like makes you cry.
But on that note, I want to go ahead and thank everybody for joining us. Of course, our usual compatriots over from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Thank you, Tom.
From AlexsGuide.net, Alex Heberling.
So long, farewell. Auf Wiedersehen, good night.
And our special bat guest today, I want to thank Kitty Hawk for joining us tonight.
Join us next bat time, same bat station, and visit SGBY.com, your one-stop shop for sexy fun.
And that leaves me. I'm your host, Thomas Rapport from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. I want to thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you in the funny papers.